Welcome to Money Markets and Masterminds, a CityWire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment, and strategic decision-making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor looking for insights, analysis, and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uesta. I'm doing my show from a very cold and wet Cape Town today, so hopefully the sound of the rain in the background will have a soothing effect on the listeners while my guest, Adrian Saville and I delve into the current state of the South African economy and its political and investment landscapes. We'll discuss why South Africa government bonds and equities are looking particularly attractive right now and how this compares to other global markets. We'll also touch on the recent elections and how political factors might influence investment decisions here and elsewhere, with over 60% of the world's population also casting their votes at their respective polls in 2024. Adrian is a seasoned executive with more than 25 years of experience in capital markets and investment management. He was the founder and chief executive of Cannon Asset Managers, but sold the business to a listed company in 2021. Last year, he decided to take a step back from active management to focus on his professorship in economics, finance, and strategy at the Gordon Institute of Business Science, or just GIBS for short, a leading international business school. He's also very involved in respective bespoke projects within the financial services industry. Welcome, Adrian. From what I hear, is also a very chilly Joburg today.
Yeah, I've got the temperatures up in the office, running along at a very cozy 24 degrees, but it's a rather nippy 11 or 12 outside.
Yeah, that sounds brutal. Adrian, it's easy to find fault with South Africa when looking at it in isolation. However, when we consider the global economic backdrop, things don't seem as dire. What are some of the more positive factors that have come to light?
Well, Ron, I think there's a range of components that put a warmer light on South Africa, read against, as you importantly point out, a global backdrop rather than in isolation. And, you know, amongst other things, we've got an equity market that looks compellingly priced. Perhaps even more than that, government bonds and long-dated government bonds offering early double-digit yields against a muted and falling domestic inflation rate. So we've got domestic inflation running at 5.5%. That will moderate as we run into or through the second half of 2024 into 2025. The MPC has been strident in their policy endeavors to tame inflation. The rand has been stable, which is to a large extent outside of the MPC's hands, but the rand has been stable. That creates great read-through for inflation. You've also got moderating global inflation. That cocktail points to the 5.5% continuing to moderate as we go through the last part of this year into next year. And you're being offered 12% on 30-year yields. You can find elevated yields, double-digit on 2032 bonds, so even shorter dated. That makes for a great case with a relatively low volatility, low risk asset giving you high real returns.
Adrian, you mentioned the Reserve Bank, which is, of course, our monetary authority. And we are in a quite high interest rate environment, of course, which makes the money market quite lucrative. But what is the more significant role they play into the attractiveness of South African investments?
Well, in part, the fact that interest rates are elevated, not just in South Africa, but globally, so our rates are high in sympathy with global rates, that hence suggests that there are capital gains to be had also as interest rates moderate, whether it's global or domestic rates falling against a backdrop of falling international rates. So that would translate into a read-through in capital gains in bonds, and the longer-dated bonds would benefit more meaningfully from any interest rate moderation domestically or globally. There's at least two howevers, and the first however is, you know, even at the short end, South Africa's interest rates and interest rate discipline translates into very attractive short-term interest rates in the likes of money markets, where money market funds, where you're getting quite compelling rates read against the inflation backdrop that we've already spoken about. You know, that's the first, however, is you're being offered very low risk, attractive yields on short-dated money or short-dated paper. The second is that sympathetically with moderating inflation and with easing interest rates globally, that will translate into quite handsome capital gains on longer dated paper, i.e., you know, in the bond market and at the far end of the bond curve. Now, where, you know, we have to throw caution into this observation is at the beginning of this year, it was anticipated that the Fed would lead the way by cutting rates as much as six times through the course of this year. Well, here we are past the halfway mark, and the Fed hasn't cut once. there's been a big disappointment in the anticipated interest rate action, but that doesn't change the fact that the barrel is loaded with those interest rate cuts, and they will come to pass. The European Central Bank moved first. The Fed will move, although it's much later and slower because of the stubborn inflation.
Adrian, you mentioned the rand earlier, currency that's actually getting quite strong. It had quite a run recently. What are the driving factors behind this? And do you think this recovery is sustainable?
You know, Ron, any conversation about the rand, you know, I'm always perhaps, you know, bemused might be the right term here, by, you know, South Africans' reaction to the rand, where, you know, as we speak, we've got 18.50 or so to the dollar. And if we were to move to 18 or 20, 19 to the dollar, you know, those moves would be 3% either side of the 18.50. But the emotional response to that 3% move would be disproportionate to the fact that we've only moved 3%. So if we were to see, you know, a 17 handle on the front of the rand, or a 19 handle on the front of the rand, it would lead to, you know, a far more dramatic reaction than what is, you know, really just a 3% move. All of that said, and this is, you know, I guess, contrary to common sentiment or popular sentiment, is the rand is attractively priced. If we use one of the most powerful models or reliable models of currency valuation, purchasing power parity, fair value for the rand, you know, hang on to your hats, is closer to 15 to the dollar than the current 18.50. And there's, in thinking about currencies, I think that there's importantly two lenses that have to be brought. So when, you know, we say that the rand is 18.50 to the dollar, it's important, you know, to ask what part of this is attributable to the rand being weak, inverted commas, and what part of this is attributable to the dollar being strong, inverted commas. And so if we read the dollar against all global currencies, the dollar is expensive, and I would put, you know, at least 20% overvaluation into that comment. Now, the rand doesn't have to do anything. The dollar just has to give up that 20% overvaluation. Think Trump 2.0. And if the dollar were to give up 20% of its overvaluation, by our estimates, 20% of 18 rand is 3 rand 60, and that gets you into 15 rand territory. You know, there you go. There's 15 to the dollar. That's one way that this could transpire. Another way is the dollar could, you know, stay strong, but the rand could find some of its lost strength against that purchasing power observation. And, well, as we're speaking, we're on day 100 of uninterrupted energy supply. I made this comment on social media, and I got all types of uncharitable comments back about, you know, these are just basic requirements, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I accept that, but it doesn't change the fact that this is different than what we experienced this time last year. That starts to translate into stronger economic growth. We've got tourist arrivals improving. Commodity prices are elevated. The South African economy is more robust under a government of national unity than the other anxieties that we were wringing our hands about, you know, what could transpire. Could it be an ANC plus one other big party type coalition? And I think we've actually come out of the election process in a far better shape than most had anticipated. The worst was priced into the rand, and I think we are in a better circumstance than that worst.
You kind of touched there on politics, which is going to be my next question. But I just want to celebrate the 100 days of no load shedding with you. Hopefully that will continue for the rest of the year. Yeah, celebrate small victories, they say. Let's get back to the politics. With elections now behind us and our new national cabinet sworn in, how or what should fund selectors and financial advisors keep their eye on for the rest of this year?
Well, you know, first, Ron, I would say that they should keep their eye on the big picture, and that as much as we can be disparaging about the muddled confusion that's likely to emanate from a government of national unity, we're not alone in being in a political landscape that is somewhat new and to a large extent, you know, even unanticipated. And if I could remind you or mention, you know, in passing, the likes of India, where Modi was supposed to get a sweeping majority. He must form a minority government. He only got 40% of the vote. Mexico voted in their first female head of state. The Mexican peso responded with horror, falling 17 to the dollar to 19 to the dollar in response. The UK is on the cusp of going to polls. They will get a Labour government, and it looks like it may be a minority Labour government. France, Macron called a snap election, and there's been great surprise in the way that pollsters are responding to that. Buckle up for Trump too. So, you know, I think it's important always to recognize that you made this observation right at the start. We need to interpret our circumstance against a global setting. And here, you know, South Africa, I think, stands in better shape than many had anticipated, and not altogether bad when read against that global backdrop. And I think that's the first thing that fund selectors should be thinking about, is getting off the dance floor and onto the balcony and seeing that big picture. And then, you know, there's a raft of other things going on in the clockwork. I've made reference to uninterrupted energy supply. This is good for mining. We've also got a very determined effort going on to fix after electricity. The next network industry that is deeply challenged is the transport infrastructure. That is on a track to being on a path to repair. I think those read-throughs are positive, and we should put then the valuation of domestic equities as the final part of our asset class consideration. We've spoken about bonds. We've spoken about cash or money market. We've spoken about currency, but we haven't spoken about equities. And read against this backdrop, South African equities look compellingly priced, especially SA Inc.
Adrian, let's talk about smooth transitions of regimes, which was what happened in South Africa, but there's still plenty uncertainty elsewhere. So closing off with the local versus the offshore investment debate, what type of foreign direct investment flows can or should we expect in the next few months, especially in such an attractive equity market as you just mentioned?
Well, if you consider the response to South Africa being grey listed and you look at the way global capital allocators reacted to that, it was with well understood, disapproval or dissatisfaction. Then the very sluggish economic growth, plus political uncertainty. So South Africa, we've had our backs against the wall on a range of issues for a number of years, and people have steadily been moving assets away from South Africa, both domestic and global managers. There's been a steady migration of assets out of the country. Very small tips in favor of South Africa can change the needle, because a marginal change in global asset allocation is an overwhelming flow of money into South Africa, given the size of the economy and given the size of our capital markets. And I think it's speculative to try and point to potential numbers. But when we're talking about global assets, we're talking about hundreds of trillions of dollars, and even modest reallocations of those hundreds of trillions in favor of emerging markets generally, and South Africa specifically, would materially move the needle. And here, I would remind you of, first I would emphasize that it's not just South Africa that has been denied assets over the last couple of years. Asset allocators globally have generally held assets away from emerging markets. And emerging markets, along with South Africa, look compellingly priced red against emerging markets, red against advanced markets from a equity perspective. So South Africa would benefit generically from an emerging market allocation, and could benefit specifically from being a better performer in what has become a somewhat challenged space. Here I would point to the two obvious examples of China, which is really struggling to get reforms and economic growth out of the blocks, and India, which has become quite expensive and now has more political uncertainty rather than certainty. South Africa could be a net beneficiary on a relative basis, and would then benefit not only specifically but generally from an allocation to emerging markets.
Adrian, despite the green shoots and the light at the end of the tunnel being clearly visible, what are some of the South African economy's greatest current concerns, and what should be prioritized by our new government for the next few months?
Ron, I would point to the obvious, the well-established complaints, the entrenched concerns about low economic growth that is below population growth, which means declining per capita incomes, entrenched inequality, elevated unemployment, all of that are the manifestations of what I would argue is the single biggest explainer of South Africa's stalled economic circumstance, and that's been an investment boycott. Both the public and private sectors have boycotted meaningful investments for the better part of a decade. And if there is a government determination to bring clear-headed, clear-minded policy to continue with these critical repairs to the network industries, and then to get on with the reforms, with the structural reforms that have been trumpeted under Operation Vulindlela, and where gains have been made. If we can get on with those things, Operation Vulindlela, repairing the network industries, which is part of that Vulindlela proposal or prospect, and then through that manifest or open the coffers of public and private sector investment, and specifically through PPPs. To me, that starts to really, fertilize those green shoots that you've spoken about.
That's great advice, and I hope the policy promises are kept and don't just end up as empty words.
From your lips.
Before we wrap up, can you share any final thoughts on what kind of untapped potential or industries or where wealth can be unlocked in the South African economy, where business or even foreign investments can actually have a look at?
Well, you know, that really would depend on who you're speaking to. So, you know, for instance, if we're speaking about, people are allocating to public markets like the Johannesburg Stock Exchange or the bond market, I would say, you know, there are fantastic capital market opportunities. Go and look at mid-sized SA Inc. companies where you've got low price earnings multiples adjusted through the cycle for inflation, and you've got dividend yields matching and in some places even exceeding those price earnings multiples. Peter Lynch says, where you see that transpiring, you know, sit up and pay attention. I couldn't agree more. Similar observation about bond markets. You've got elevated yields, falling inflation, and you've got a relatively, I'll use that word, relatively disciplined fiscus, things to repair. But, you know, this is an attractive yield. If I were to have the same conversation with private equity, I would say to private equity, wow, you know, have a look at those public companies where you're being offered, you know, just absolutely screamingly attractive valuations, great balance sheets, well-run businesses with long established histories. So I think, you know, in part, I'm not trying to avoid the question, but it really depends on who's asking the question. If I were to say to policymakers, you know, where is the opportunity? Without question, the untapped opportunity in South Africa is the tourism cluster. It's highly labor absorptive. The barriers to entry are low. You can start up businesses relatively quickly. Regulations don't require all types of dancing through bureaucratic hoops. You can get businesses off the ground with low amounts of capital, create jobs, and bring in valuable dollars. South Africa is a fantastic destination. And I mean, you're in rainy Cape Town, but wow, you know, if I were earning euro, pounds, dollars, yen, and holidaying in Cape Town, what a fantastic global experience. And then if our minerals regulator could just clear his head, mining and minerals, about the fantastic resources that South Africa sits on in terms of the mining industry. I think those are some of the real potentials and prospects that sit in South Africa.
As a girl who grew up in a mining town, I hope the latter does happen. Well, that's all the time we have for today. And thank you, Adrian, for joining us on the show and for showing us the brighter side of South African life. Despite the challenges, South Africa does offer a unique combination of high yields, attractive equity valuations, and a strengthening currency. For investors with a higher risk tolerance and a long-term horizon, the current environment does present compelling opportunities. To all our Citywire South Africa listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money, Markets, and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uister, and Adrian Saville. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts. All Citywire South Africa's podcasts and videos are also now visible under a new section on its homepage at www.citywire.co.za. Go register and have a look at our wealth of multimedia content. And with that, until next time, goodbye.